What are we doing here, Kenny? What's going on?
Not much. Hello, and welcome to Pop Culture Classics. My name is Kenny Puckett, and with me, as always, is Levi Smith.
Yeah, man. Great with the awkward opening.
It is now. So if this is the first time you're joining us, welcome. In this podcast, we sit down and discuss old and new pop culture, kind of like rummaging through the back issue box of a comic book shop. So what are we doing here?
Well, I mean,
you're going first, right?
I guess so. Okay. Yeah. We've kind of figured that out. We're in some weird kind of Star Trek-y time loop now.
Yes.
So, yeah, I was thinking I had something else in mind. I was going to watch something and then I didn't watch it last night. So instead I figured, you know, you and I, are both Magic players and I figured we could talk about the new set.
Okay.
You know, we both have been playing Magic for a long time since just about like the early beginning of the game, you know, back in like, well, like at least like a year after it first came out.
Yeah.
From like 94.
Yeah. Right after we heard about it though, we got sucked in pretty hard.
Oh yeah.
Like I was saying, I think Revised is the first official set that I was buying. Like I was buying on my own Revised
starter decks.
Yeah. And Legends.
Yeah. We were totally. Yeah. In that era, buying packs for Dark and Legends and Fallen Empires.
Yeah. That was the first, time I saw it like widely available.
The first box I ever bought was Homelands.
Yes.
That was a spectacular disaster.
Put me off buying boxes for a long time.
It really did, man. Yeah. It really soured my whole experience for a good bit.
That whole set kind of soured my experience.
Yeah. That set was rough, man.
I
really wanted it to be good.
I wish I would have stayed into it because like there was a couple of really good set. Alliances was okay. And there's a couple sets after that were okay.
Still kind of in through like Urza, you know, the Urza block and stuff.
Yeah, I was out of it.
I didn't get out until Mercadian Masks. And then
I was way lightly in at that point.
Yeah, yeah. And then I was out, you know, I wasn't playing anymore. I wasn't buying anything anymore. And then got back in around World Wake.
Yeah, I got in just before that. Lorwyn.
Lorwyn. Yeah. I missed out on a lot of that stuff.
Steve and I started playing again.
Right. That's right. Yeah. And you guys were trying to get me back into the game around then.
Yeah.
And I got back in just in time for Rise of the Eldrazi, which was fantastic.
Yeah. That was awesome. And then shortly after that, though, we got into Commander.
Absolutely. I mean, that's all I play. You know, I mean,
yeah,
guys play a little bit of Arena and stuff.
I don't play Arena,
standard or whatever, but
I played mostly Commander. Or actually I really just play all Commander now.
Yeah.
I don't like Standard. Cause it really is pay to win there.
Yeah. And I don't care. I don't care about Standard or Modern. I really like more Eternal formats.
Yeah. Me too.
You know, I'm a casual player.
Yeah.
You know,
I wouldn't mind trying a cube or what was it? Tower.
I've got a cube in mind. I think Tower is a really cool way to play that's really fair and that goes back to feeling like everybody gets to play Magic.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. I have been working on building a cube, but that, you know, maybe I'm just making it too complicated, but you know,
cubes are hard.
Could be tough. Yeah.
Cubes are hard.
Especially without a template. I've looked at a couple of templates, but I'm trying to build one from scratch.
Yeah. You know? There's a few things out there. And then this new format that you're talking about seems kind of interesting.
Horde. Yeah. Well, that's, I had heard about this from, another friend of mine. So I guess the original Horde deck, it's like an autopilot, arch enemy. Yeah. Arch enemy kind of, format or structure. So it's a deck that plays itself and that is mostly full of tokens.
Okay.
And as it plays out, like, so the deck is its life. Mm-hmm. So when you deal damage to it, you know, you take, you mill cards from it.
How many cards are in it?
Well, it all depends. It can start off with a hunter card deck, and then if you're playing against it solo, then you basically like cut it in half or cut it down to like 40 cards sort of thing, you know, so you can cut the size of it down.
Okay.
And then depending on how many players you have, you can add, you know, more of the full size back up to it.
Okay.
But then each turn for the horde, it draws until it gets a non-token.
Okay.
And then all the tokens go on the battlefield. It has infinite mana, so it casts the spell that it draws.
Okay.
And then it has to attack every turn with every creature that can attack. And then the idea is to beat this thing as it just, you know, pumps out tokens and then casts spells. The first one was a zombie deck. Crank out, you know, zombie tokens and then cast some zombie spell or a zombie creature that gives all its zombies menace or plus one or whatever anthem effects or synergy effects and stuff, you know.
Okay.
And then it's not supposed to run anything that's like too particularly targeted or fetch or anything that really like expects the horde deck to make any decisions, you know, like choosing a player or choosing a creature, you know.
So it's like either board wipes or
mass effects, big effects, you know.
Okay.
I've built one, but I haven't really played it.
Okay.
I haven't really tested it much, but I think the idea is pretty cool.
Yeah. That's interesting. So you wanted to talk about the new Modern Horizons 2 set?
Yeah, the latest set that's now being spoiled that seems to call back to a lot of crazy old school stuff. It's been, you know, really hyped up, eye-catching, you know, a lot of weird powerful cards. You know, we've got a legendary creature that can make a token of a Black Lotus.
People are going bonkers over that.
Garth the One-Eyed, yeah.
So
there's already combos
are people,
to go infinite with that guy.
Yeah. And like one card, are they making a Black Lotus token or are they not?
I don't think that they are.
Yeah. Usually cause when something makes a token in the set, they usually make it.
Yeah. They don't always do that. But they are doing it more and more. And I think that they're probably just going to reserve the right to not make, you know,
Black Lotus token. Because
it would be interesting if they made a cycle where you got a disenchant token, a terror token, a Shivan Dragon token, a regrowth token, you know, Black Lotus, all the cards that it can that it can cast.
I was assuming that they're going to make it. I didn't realize that. And then I saw that somebody, they had said that they're not going to make it because they can't.
I think there's been an official announcement because it would be a functional reprint, you know.
Well, unless they put token on it, put the word artifact token.
Yeah, artifact token. You don't put a casting cost on it, right? Or you would.
You would.
Yeah. The back, you know, wouldn't have a magic back.
No, it'd have an ad.
Yeah, it would have an ad on the back. But, I mean, it's not going to stop from the proxies.
No, I mean, I would. I don't. So I mean, a Black Lotus would be awesome.
But an official Black Lotus token, I think, would qualify as a functional reprint.
I wonder. Yeah. Now I'm curious if they're actually going to.
And then that right there, I mean, that just shatters the reserve list.
Well, they've kind of already done that.
I mean, they've bent it. They haven't shattered.
They've bent it pretty hard.
They have bent it. But, you know, I think if they're going to dissolve the reserve list, it's going to be slowly. Yeah. Because those are big ticket reprints, you know, especially the things that people really care about, you know.
Yeah.
Dual lands, you know, Mox,
Power Nine.
Yeah.
So speaking of, besides that, what are some of the other cards you're thinking that are pretty cool?
Well, from Modern Horizons, I mean, there's been some really cool stuff. The Planeswalker Grist, you know.
Oh, yeah. The one that's a creature.
That's an insect, a creature in every other place. So in the graveyard, in your library, in your hand, it counts as an insect.
It can be a commander.
So because of that, and it's legendary. Yeah, it's a legendary creature. In the command zone, at least. Yeah.
Yeah. In the command zone. So, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah. And they've clarified that you can use it as a commander.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a very cool one.
Yeah. That's really bizarre. And then things that are almost kind of like silly, like this, ornithopter, of paradise, you know, that it's an ornithopter and a birds of paradise just literally smashed together.
Yeah. They've been doing that. They did that in the last set. Or in Commander Legends with Latin War Visionary.
Right, totally. And that, like, just on-the-nose combination.
Yeah, it was a Latin War Elves and an Elvish Visionary. Elvish
Visionary, just...
Same casting cost to cast both of them, smashed into one.
Yep. And just combined them, which is... it's pretty interesting.
One of the ones that I thought was cool was Torok, which is kind of a throwback to the Hymn to Torok.
Right, Hymn to Torok. So now we actually have Torok as a card. Yeah.
Yeah, because in Commander Legends, I wonder if he's a leftover from Commander's Legends.
Right, right.
Because, they did Nevernell.
Yep.
And they did Tormund.
And they've been doing this since Dominaria, which went over really well.
Yeah, bringing back all the old
making
characters.
Making new cards of old characters, or making cards for characters that have never had a card before.
Yeah.
Because like Feldon and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, Feldon and Teferi.
Teferi, Yawgmoth.
Urza.
Absolutely.
There is an old school Mishra card too that I know, but it's kind of lame.
Ashnod. Isn't there an Ashnod in this new set?
I don't know.
I don't know if it is. Yeah.
That would be cool. And then there's that one, the Asma, whatever.
Oh, Asmora.
Yeah.
With the, really insane name that, there's no room for a casting cost.
Yeah.
On the card. And I agree. Some of these things are getting a little close to silver border-ish,
Yeah, a little bit.
But it's pretty cool. I mean, that character was first mentioned back, I think, as far back as like the Dark.
Mm-hmm. With Hans.
Granite Gargoyle.
Yeah, the Hans Run. She's the one who said it.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
No, I thought that was Eric's daughter or what? I think that's somebody else. I don't think that's
no. I thought it was. Yeah. I thought it was her because I watched the. Gavin Verhey's YouTube videos every once in a while, and he was talking about how that card throws back to
Lurgoyf.
That.
Yeah.
Well, no, the one he talks. One of the ones he talks about is that's where everybody gets how to actually say that name is because he gets the guy some guy who knows how to say it. Yeah. I think he's the guy who created the card.
Yeah.
He talks about how it's kind of a throwback to Hans.
Okay.
Who they printed in Commander Legends.
Okay.
They say that that's at least if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I haven't heard that reference. The reference I had heard was to the Granite Gargoyle.
Yeah, it's on. That's the card that the quote is on.
Okay. But the quote is about cooking a Granite Gargoyle.
Oh.
It's not about Hans. That's on the Lurgoyf.
Is that the Lurgoyf?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
maybe I'm confusing two
Lurgoyf. Yeah.
Two videos.
Which there's a new Goyf. There's that Goyf
artifact. Altar of Goyf. It's a tribal artifact. Yeah. Which they haven't done tribal artifacts in a while. They're doing all kinds of cool.
Yeah, I mean they're bringing back everything in this set, man. I mean, I've seen, there's investigate,
yes.
Surveil, suspend. Cascade,
the new Zoran Orvar
for artifacts, devour artifacts,
the new
echo,
the new what is it? The new art on the Zoran Orb is really cool.
Reinforce,
yes.
Did they reprint Zoran Orb?
Yep,
wow,
here you go.
This the Douthi Voidwalker. Which this creature is a particularly that's wild. They reprint Zoran Orb. Uncommon. That's crazy. This guy, the 2-black 3/2 Douthi Rogue has shadow. If a card would be put into an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, instead exile it with a void counter on it.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
Sacrifice Douthi Void Walker choose an exile card an opponent controls with a void counter on it, and you may play it this turn without paying its mana cost.
I think that's going to be like...
That is nuts.
That's going to be kind of like the unsung Dockside.
Yeah.
It's going to be this set's Dockside. People are like, when it came out, they're like, that ain't that good. And yeah. then people start using it in games and understand how amazing that doing. Fucking card
yeah.
is.
Yeah. Yeah, this thing is nuts, man. I mean, it's one of those things that it's just going to be bonkers broken. Yeah.
Yeah, what do you think about the new Elder Dragon that's like finish the cycle of Elder Dragons?
It's formatted to the original Elder Dragons.
What's the one that was missing?
Oh, really?
Yeah, they
didn't Mardu one?
They didn't have a Mardu one back in the day.
Okay, wow. Interesting.
So that's why it's the three.
That's why it's
two of each color.
Two of each color, two colorless.
It's exactly like the OG ones. You
have to pay the upkeep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's a 7/7. Yeah.
Yeah.
It fits the standard old school Chromium Arcady Sabbath.
Yeah, yeah. They just kind of did that. They're reprinting Vindicate, which I think is a great fucking...
Absolutely. Yeah.
Great one. And then one we have talked about before, the Dakon.
Yeah, Dakon Blackblade.
Well, it's Dakon Shadow Slayer. He's a planeswalker. That's
right, yeah. He doesn't have his Blackblade.
Well, he does, but they can't call it a Dakon Blackblade because
that's for sure. Yeah. That's
another card.
The original card.
Yeah. That one's cool, but that other planeswalker, what is her name? Greadon Dehada?
Yeah, yeah. Geadron Dehada is mm-hmm. actually the witch that duped Dakon back in the day.
Oh, okay.
That coerced him into forging the Black Blade, using it to stab his shadow and steal his soul, basically enthralling him to her and using her for
I didn't know that.
And stuff. Yeah, yeah. So she's one of the oldest evil wizards in the story, not related to like the Urza War.
Oh, okay. You
know, like, so her backstory goes back to the original legends just as much as Dakon stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. She's another old schooler.
That's interesting because it sounds like it's a play on that. There's that story where the guy has that sword, that soul swallowing sword.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fantasy story. I can't think of the name of it right now.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, because that's, you know, the Black Blade kind of does that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's been used to kill elder dragons. And, yeah, but her abilities, though, with the corrupt counters and mm-hmm. stuff is pretty wild. Yeah. And that's.
She corrupts something and then they can't do anything to her because she controls them.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what she did to Dakon.
Yeah.
And so just a bunch of great cards.
Oh, man. They're reprinting. A commander card, Chainer Nightmare Adept.
Chainer, yep.
That's I mean, that was a reprint. He was an old character that they made a new card for, but it's a reprint from one of the years of Commander. I can't remember which one.
Nevenral's Disc is being reprinted.
Yeah.
Yeah, just crazy. Bragavan, the monkey, the pirate monkey.
Oh, yeah, that's a great card. Pirate. What do you think about the there's two cycles that are kind of new or kind of redone, the pitch cycle. So the discard or exile a card and then
of the color to
each cast color
a spell.
Yeah. Yeah. So they have one of each of those.
What a new force of will.
No, they don't have a counter each of the spells, but they have. Oh, it's a suspend. They have the suspend ones, which are, it's like one and suspend and it does something ridiculous. Like the green one is, it's called Gaea's Will, but it's Yawgmoth's Will, basically.
Right, right.
You can play, yeah. Until end of turn, you may play lands and cast spells from your graveyard. If a card would be put in your graveyard from anywhere this turn, exile it instead. So it's basically a Yawgmoth's Will, which is a very expensive reserve list card.
Totally, yeah.
And so, but they're also doing that in each color. It has one of those, suspend cards.
Okay. I see. That are kind of in a way like recreating.
Yeah. Like recreating
old powerful
reserve list cards.
Card abilities.
Well, there's a demonic tutor, which is not on the reserve, the profane tutor.
Okay.
It's one in a black suspend.
Yeah, demonic tutor is not on the reserve list.
No, but the card in that.
I think it used to be.
The card in that cycle is for Black is the profane tutor.
Gotcha.
So it suspends. It doesn't have a casting cost. It suspends itself. I'm trying to think what the red card is here. I'm kind of flipping through my... Oh, it's the Glimpse of Tomorrow for red, which is 2 red and suspend 3. Shuffle all your permanents you own into your library and then reveal that many cards from the top of your library. Put all non-aura permanent cards revealed this way onto the battlefield. Then do the same for aura cards. Then put the rest of them in the bottom of your library. So basically you reset the board. You have a bunch of stuff out and you cast it and you reset everything. So you don't know what you're going to get. That one's pretty cool. We talked about the black one, which is profane.
Right.
What was the blue one I showed you last night when you were like, that's pretty crazy.
Oh, yeah.
The inevitable betrayal.
You tutor somebody else's library.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that one's pretty crazy. So that's one cycle is the suspend, no casting cost. But then they have the invoke ones, which are... it's a creature with ability.
Oh, the invocation?
Yeah. So it's the, like the white one is solitude.
Right.
So it's flash lifelink. When solitude enters the battlefield, exile up to one target creature. That creature's controller gains life equal to its power.
Yeah.
So it's like a Swords of Plowshares or a Path to Exile.
Right.
Or no, yeah. Swords of Plowshares.
Yeah.
But you can, and so you don't have to pay the casting costs. You can just... discard. It's an
echo, right?
Or no, invoke.
Oh, okay,
invoke. Which means you cast a creature with an ability and you just get the ability.
Yeah.
It comes into play and then it leaves.
You basically cast as a spell.
Yeah, but it comes into play.
But it does ETB and
then the thing happens and then it goes away.
Yeah.
So yeah, the white one is a the Swords of Plowshares, and then the blue one is when subtlety enters the battlefield, choose up to one target creature, spell, or planeswalker. Its owner puts it on the top or bottom of their library, which is kind of a cool effect. You kind of get a tuck, but it's chosen by the person.
Okay.
And I'm trying to find the black one here.
I can't believe the artifact lands are indestructible.
That is crazy, isn't it?
That is wild.
Oh, you were talking about the Break the Ice earlier, which is the Snow Sinkhole.
Yes. With the overload effect?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where's the black one? Nuts.
What?
The Reprinting Greed, which is good.
Mishra's Factory.
Yep.
Goblin Bombardment. Yeah, the reprints have been great. The new cards have been great, man. I mean, this set has just been really, really impressive as far as how much it touches back into like Magic nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
Printing up, you know, legendary creatures of all these. Yeah, and especially now because they really do have an incentive, you know, wanting to crank out more legendary creatures for Commander.
Yeah.
To bring out all of these named creatures. I mean, all the awesome named legendary creatures from Legends that had crappy cards.
Yeah. They can reprint them as good cards.
So now they can give them new cards. And it's going to be fantastic. The whole squirrel theme. I mean, some of the naming conventions, the artwork, I mean, it's just fantastic.
The saga, the only saga in the set.
Oh yeah. There's a saga.
Urza's Saga.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Urza's Saga.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, entering into the list of cards that have names that share set names.
Yeah.
Like Future Sight.
Future Sight.
And there's another one. I can't remember it.
The Dark.
Is there a dark card?
I think so, there is.
No.
But yeah, Urza's Saga is pretty cool. It's an enchantment land, which is...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
New.
Enchantment land saga.
Yeah, comes in and you can tap it for a colorless mana. And then on the second turn, you can... Oh, dude, imagine if somebody puts out a...
Yeah, you make the golem, right? You make a golem.
Yeah, you make a golem. Or no, you make a...
an art construct.
A construct, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you search your library for a 0 or 1 mana value artifact.
Right.
So everything Urza... It's exactly what Urza would do. Colorless mana, a golem.
Yeah.
And an artifact.
Yeah. And then look for a mox.
Well, you look for a mox or a soul ring.
Yeah. you know, an ornithopter.
An ornithopter. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a good amount of, you know, was it Lion's Eye Diamond? You know.
Yeah, you know. LED. Yeah. So yeah, there's some really cool cards, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, there's a white enchantment that's got that phases stuff out, and it has vanishing. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm looking at a green frog samurai with Bushido. Straight up Jade Avenger. It's a common. It's a one and a green for a 2/2 with Bushido 2.
I can't believe we
creature, frog samurai.
We haven't mentioned the two things: reprinting Cabal Coffers.
For sure. Yeah.
Which is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
They needed to reprint that goddamn card several times now. And then Esper Sentinel, which is a Rhystic Study.
Yeah. Yeah. Esper Sentinel is cool. Yeah. The Rhystic Buddy.
Yeah. Yeah. The Rhystic Buddy. Yeah. That's great. That's fantastic. so yeah, that's the new set. I have already purchased a box, so yeah, I should get it.
I think I'm totally priced out. I'm going to be doing singles for Modern Horizons.
Yeah, I just got it when it came out. I was like, fuck it. It hurt, but you know.
Yeah. Oh, dude. No, it's good because, I mean, shit hasn't even come out yet and the prices are going up like crazy.
Yeah, they're crazy. They'll settle down though. I think it usually settles.
I think
down.
I'll be able to handle singles, no problem. There's a lot of commons and uncommons I want to get out of this, you know. And if there's a couple of these cards like Garth the One Eyed and stuff like that, you know, if like
or the Esper try to or Rhystic Buddy,
yeah. If I order up early, you know,
early,
yeah.
After it comes out, before it goes back up,
yeah, yeah. When everybody's opening them.
Yes. You
know, yeah.
And sell them for that large amount. Yeah. So they drop a little bit. Cool. All right. That's my turn, I guess, now.
Yeah.
So I wanted to kind of talk about, I've been watching Bad Batch.
Right. Right.
Which is actually very, the first episode aired, I was kind of about it. I didn't think it was going to be as cool.
You know, to tell you the truth, I felt really lost.
Yeah.
And this is coming from somebody that has not, but has also tried to watch Clone Wars and the Rebels.
So it's really terrible about Clone Wars at how terrible the first season is. A lot of people say that you just got to force your way through it because there's a lot of good story that gets you that right. pays off in the end.
Right.
One of the things I like about the first season of Clone Wars that I didn't know about until just recently, actually, is the Ahsoka Tano arc. And
right.
He did it with another character. Oh, he did it with Sabine in Rebels. He did it with both the Ahsoka Tano and Sabine, which were both hated characters when they came out.
Right.
Dave Filoni set up at the beginning.
Like it's crafted that way, though.
Yeah, it was crafted. He designed that character for everybody to hate.
Yeah,
and he's like, the only way we can get people to actually like this character is we have to make them hate it first,
right?
And then come through their redemption arc with, you know, this character has to be a hated character intentionally and
kinda
go through a redemption
arc, kind of like Zuko's character arc in. You know, in The Last Airbender.
Yeah, it's very similar to that. Yeah. But I think with Zuko, it was
not
new property.
So obvious with the villain nature. Well, yeah. Because Zuko started off as a villain.
Villain, yeah. Well, he got a redemption. He got the redemption arc.
Right.
Which is, you know, but the thing about Ahsoka and what made her cool and interesting throughout the whole Clone Wars is that they start her out as a brash, young kid that just does whatever she wants,
right,
and doesn't get in trouble for it, and it usually works out in her favor,
right?
And so that happens for a little while.
Until it doesn't,
and then something happens, and then she doesn't get really punished, but she kind of sees what's going on,
right? So she learns.
Well, no, she doesn't learn. There's like three episodes, and I forgot what they are, but there's three very specific episodes, you know, where she's doing one thing, and then something happens or she's doing terrible things, making terrible choices and getting away with it. And things work out in her favor.
Right.
And then it gets to the point where she starts continues doing that because there's no consequences to her actions.
Yeah.
She's a perfect character. Nobody likes her because she doesn't have any flaws because she never gets in trouble.
Right.
And then, so then she starts making mistakes and bad things happen. but she still is okay because she doesn't really get it, or there's no consequences to her actions.
Gotcha.
And so that happens for a little bit. Yeah. And then finally it gets to a point and it's an episode, and then she does something. She's not listening to Anakin. She's not listening to Yoda. She's not listening to Obi-Wan, and they have to come down and save her. And a whole squadron of troopers gets wiped out because of her not listening. She's like, no, I can do this. I can get this. And she's like, no, they're like, no, you're about to be overrun. And then they pick her up and they leave, and she watches all these people get destroyed, and she actually gets punished for it.
Yeah.
And so she goes through this redemption of, oh, this is, you know,
then she finally learns and goes through that.
And then she starts going through, and then she becomes, and that's when everybody started liking her. So if you watch the whole Clone Wars series, like I said, the first season is so terrible. The second season and the third season get a little bit better, but after that, it's really good.
Yeah.
And the final season is amazing. Some of the best storytelling and stuff that I've ever seen.
Oddly enough, and I don't know what it is, but yeah, but there's just been something about it. Like, so even with the Bad Batch, because I have watched like the first three episodes.
Yeah.
And I still feel so lost.
Yeah.
It really feels like there's a lot more going on that I'm not aware of.
There's I think one thing I like about it is that it is actually what they started with the Clone Wars, and what they said is that it's the plan is to slowly have it go between those two movies. You know,
for sure. Yeah.
Episode one or episode two and three.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So from two to three, mm-hmm. you know, and the story, it's what happens between those two movies.
Right.
And I think that's the whole reason they made that major time jump.
Yeah.
And there's all that stuff that they kind of left out in the movies, because that's a lot of stuff they can't cover.
Right.
But they wanted to tell that story. So Dave Filoni went back and started telling that story. And like I said, it was set up as a kid's show, and then they just slowly worked over their way out of it.
Right. Yeah.
And it was really good. And like I said, the last two seasons that aired on TV were really good. Mm-hmm. The last season that got put on Netflix was really good. And then the final season on Disney Plus is amazing.
Yeah. It looks great.
It looks fantastic. Yeah. And then just, it's a lot of, he's tying up all the stuff with Ahsoka and telling you why she's not in the movies and why that character.
Oh, right.
Because that character would be in the movies. Yeah, it's Anakin's Padawan.
Right.
Why they haven't talked about that character.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so what happened with that character and why she's not there. Yeah. And so they tell that story in that last season. They kind of wrap everything up because it starts, her story arc starts just before Anakin really starts going to the dark side.
Right.
And it leads up to what happened during Order 66.
Right.
And what happens with her and why she's not with them.
Yeah. I've got some ideas about, like, you know, Ahsoka in Order 66.
Yeah. No, they tell the story. They say, this is what happened and this is where she's at and why.
I've seen some summary bits.
Why Darth Vader doesn't go get her. So anyways, that's kind of on a tangent there. But, also in the season, the beginning of the final season, they did four episodes of The Bad Batch,
right?
Which was originally intended to be in the final season of Clone Wars anyways.
Okay.
Because he had pitched this as a show prior.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think this is him wanting to tell the story of what happens after the Clone Wars movie.
Right.
So he told the other series, Rebels, that he did was after the first Death Star explosion.
Okay.
So Mandalorian is after the second one and Rebels is after the first one.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
So it takes place after the first one.
Yeah. Cause Mandalorian's like what, like 5-7 years after the Battle of Yavin.
Yeah. Yeah. So it takes place after
Battle of Endor.
Endor. Yeah. So it takes place after the second explosion. Yeah. Rebels takes it place between those two, basically after the first one, leading up to the second one.
Okay.
Which is kind of, it's hard to watch that first season.
Yeah.
Once you get out of it, he really kicks it into gear after that.
I think, you know, just as a general commentary to Star Wars and Star Trek, I'd really like to see more forward iteration from these two franchises than them trying to like fill in all the blanks. you know, and interweave between existing timelines.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's such a dance that's so, you know, I mean, it's real, it's been hit and miss with both franchises with audiences.
Yeah.
And I think it's so difficult, like all the retconning, all the explaining why, you know,
yeah.
Oh, we're going to introduce somebody new, but this is before a whole bunch of other major stuff. So we got to explain why that new thing that we're introducing now didn't exist in the old stuff.
I don't think
it happens later.
I think it was planned the way though, the way they have it set up.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited about Ahsoka having her own TV show and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, I think now, and I think what we're finally going to get, especially with Dave Filoni, you know, really helming creatively,
yeah,
you know, Star Wars, is a real arcing type storyline.
Yeah.
You know, and having that planned out so that it actually does interweave in a way that makes sense.
I think he's going to do more forward thinking stuff.
Yeah.
Which,
and so I want to see more.
And I believe,
like, I think that's what I really like about Mandalorian, is because it really happens. Like, it's the most contemporary in the timeline of the storyline.
Yeah.
You know, it's after Endor, it's after Luke.
Yeah.
It's not before anything. It's not in between anything. It's actually the next forward step.
Well, I think Clone Wars is him taking things like, he wants to tell more stuff about it's a black sun at the time of what's happening going on in The Bad Batch, that time, yeah, period. It's called Black Sun, but it turns into Crimson Dawn.
Okay.
So from the Solo movie,
right?
The criminal organization run by Darth Maul,
right?
And that's one of the things I'm thinking is coming up in Bad Batch, is that they're gonna bring Darth Maul, because he's been in everything.
Yeah, that Dave Filoni has done.
No, in every Star Wars movies, games, yeah, TV shows. I mean,
he's a badass character.
He's a very cool character.
Yeah.
And Dave Filoni really kind of did that character justice. And that's what he's really good at, is taking a character that was very handled very poorly and then redeeming them.
Right.
Darth Maul arc from during Clone Wars, about how he comes back and how he's crazy and
I watched
the
whole summary
that is so good
on YouTube about Darth Maul's path and everything.
Yeah. And then
living in the sewers and getting his robot legs and meeting his family and, you know, getting betrayed by his family and reteaming up with his family and
all that stuff. Yeah. And then
dying at the hands of Obi-Wan. And
That is the best lightsaber battle.
Yeah.
It's so awesome. That's in Rebels. And that whole story arc in Rebels is amazing too. Yeah. I like how he brought Ahsoka and Darth Maul into it. So what I'm thinking is that the Bad Batch timeline is when Black Sun and Crimson Dawn, like, it's when Darth Maul has just kind of created that at the end of during the final season of Clone Wars. One of the scenes you do see is him talking to the different leaders of all the different crime syndicates, and that he takes over and kind of controls.
Hell yeah.
And he like tells the, and you can see that he's kind of, everybody assumes that he's telling them to go hide. Because he knows what Sidious is doing and what's going to happen. So he's telling him to go hide and be ready. And then after the fall of the Republic and then the Empire comes along, that he knows that they can come back and do what they need to do to make, and he can become a solid empire or a solid, like, its own faction.
Yeah.
But he has to be very wary because he can't let Sidious or Palpatine know that he's alive.
Yeah.
And they kind of allude to a little bit of it because they had Ray Park come back and do that scene in Solo.
Oh, nice.
Remember at the end of Solo?
Totally.
Yeah. So I think and then they had, in the latest episode of Bad Batch, they go to Ord Mandel, which is famously the headquarters of Crimson Dawn.
Okay.
I think they're going to bring Darth Maul and he's going to tell that story of how he takes over the criminal organization. And that's going to be the Bad Batches. That's who the Bad Batch is going to fight. That's going to be their, during however many seasons they have of that show, I think that's going to be their adversaries.
Yeah.
Kind of like the robot army during Clone Wars, you know, or the, what do they call it? Not the Republic, the, whatever the, not the Grand Army of the Republic. Can't remember what they call the, Separatist.
Oh, right.
So yeah, I think, and then they're going to bring, I think what Dave Filoni is going to do is he's going to bring one of his other characters from Clone Wars is, it's Ahsoka's friend when they were young.
Yeah.
In the Jedi Order before they got,
is this the Ezra Miller thing?
No, it's not Ezra Miller. It's, oh God, what's her name? I can't think of her name, but it was her friend when they were, younglings and they were friends. And then they both went off and got Padawans and, her Padawan is a very famous, Jedi also.
Yeah.
Which shows up later in the story, in the Rebel story. She shows up in there
right.
in a way that's not, they put her in a stasis and she draws, and that's how they were catching Jedi, is that they would sense this renowned Jedi. And so the Jedi would come try to save her.
Right.
And it's a trap and the Inquisitors would take them.
Yeah.
But her Padawan, ended up going to the dark side.
Okay.
Being manipulated and going to the dark side and betraying the Jedi Order and then getting arrested. And that's what leads Ahsoka to leaving the Jedi Order.
Right.
And so that Padawan, nobody found out that's one of Dave Filoni's favorite characters. And nobody.
What's his name?
I can't remember her name.
That's terrible.
It's terrible. I know.
You're killing me.
But yeah, so I think they're going to bring her and Darth Maul into the Bad Batch series.
Into Bad Batch.
Yeah, and right. So you're going to find out what happened to these cool characters from Clone Wars.
Right on, man. That'll
so,
be cool.
And the last episode of Bad Batch was really good. They went to, like I said, they went to Ormondel, and they somebody kidnapped Jabba the Hutt's Rancor, but it was when it was a baby.
Oh, nice.
And so they had to go save it. Wow. And so you see Bib Fortuna.
Right.
And he comes in because the Bad Batch saves it from whoever had it.
Yeah.
And so Bib Fortuna comes and picks it up and the Bad Batch gets paid for saving it.
Right.
And so it was a really cool, interesting story. And so you see the Rancor and who they are and before Luke finds the Rancor and
right. And has to kill it.
Has to kill it.
Yeah.
I think the Bad Batch is actually turning up, or what some people are calling it online is this Clone Wars season 8.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And why not? You know, I mean, this is the opportunity to complete those things.
Yeah.
What do we have here, Kenny?
What do we have here? So we're doing the top five with a D10.
Yes. And it's your turn.
Well, yeah, I guess it is because you did roll last week.
Yeah,
I rolled twice. Ready?
You remember that now, huh?
Yes, I do. Well, yeah, I do. Seven.
Comics.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
Oof. All right. Favorite comics.
Yeah, I didn't go too deep on this, man. I didn't get all Brody on it. You
know? Yeah, I did a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, how's your comic collection, Brody?
I guess I'm going first, right?
Yep.
I'll go with my number five. I'm sure this is probably on your list. Joe Psycho Moo Frog?
No.
It falls under my favorite comic for the main reason of it inspired me and taught me that comics don't have to be super teams.
Yeah. Yeah. Hugely inspiring. It was, I mean, it would definitely make an honorable mention for me at least because of how influential it was, art style. And it was really one of those comics that were, you know, some people like see art and they're like, oh, I could do better than this.
Right. Yeah.
I saw that and I was like, I could make this.
Yeah.
You know, I really felt like I could do something like on that level. And it was far more interesting to me than trying to do like another X-Men ripoff.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I put it on there is because it did the same thing to me. I was like, man, this is great. These are the kind of stories I like to read, you know, just like this.
Yeah. This is fun as hell.
And his online comic, I've always
Fighting the Cockroach.
Yeah. The one, it's like a 2 or 3 panel little comic that he put in the back of one of the issues of when he used to do stuff online, where he did like a computer gag where this thing runs into him. He's like, ow, what's your problem? He's like, I'm RAM.
Yeah.
You know, totally. It's like a stupid computer joke. And I'm like,
little 3 panel bits and stuff.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, that is amazing. Yeah. So
Jason Rains is the creator of Joe Psycho and Roof Frog. Yeah.
Yeah. I know that.
Good stuff, man. Good stuff.
It's amazing.
Well, good choice. Yeah. Mine, my number five is, the Uncanny X-Men, the Chris Claremont era.
That's a good choice.
I mean, it was just, it was one of those things that really made me fall in love with like really complex storytelling in comics, the soap opera-ness, you know, and it was just masterful. I mean, it was just, you know, it was a special time in comics, I think, you know.
Yeah, the art was amazing too.
Yeah, yeah.
It was great art and great story. And I think I've read a lot of those books too. It was him with him and the Will Spartaceo run that did that. That was so amazing.
Right, yeah.
And like Storm and Forge and
absolutely
all these great, just like cool stories.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just that whole, the whole Chris Claremont run through all the different artists, Jim Lee, Will Spartaceo.
Yeah.
Mark Silvestri was even in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a great era. Yeah.
Those are great comics. Yeah. So for my number four, I chose kind of a one-shot thing. It's traditional comics. It's a Fantastic Four 1, 2, 3, 4. It was a mini series, 4 issues. Each of the issues focused on one of the characters.
Right.
But it was one story through all 4 issues, but each issue, the story focused on each of the characters, and it was, Doom using magic to kind of pick apart the Fantastic Four one at a time.
Yeah.
And then Reed Richards was the final issue. He was his spotlight issue was the 4th one. And Doom was just like using pure magic, cause he knew he'd failed at using science against him this whole time. And so he sits there and he tries to use magic to defeat them. And then in the end, Reed Richards is actually using magic to help defend his family and brings them back together. When he tells Doom, he's like, do you think I don't look into this too?
Right.
It was just a cool story.
That's cool. Yeah. Yeah. Cause that immediate assumption would be that Reed would just ignore or overlook magic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a cool and interesting take on the Fantastic Four.
You guys have been using magic on me for a long time. You think I'm not going to study that shit?
Yeah. Yeah. That's basically what it was.
That's awesome. My number four is Amazing Spider-Man, the Mark Bagley era.
Oof. That is some good comics too.
Yeah. I mean, that's Maximum Carnage. It's a creation of Carnage. It's a lot of the Ravencroft stuff.
Oh yeah.
It's actually a strong part of Spider-Man's history that they base a lot of video games on and stuff.
You know? Yeah, it's true. A lot of his look, I think, is based on a lot of the stuff he does.
There's the easy, you know, the easy fan love for the Todd McFarlane Spider-Man, which was awesome, or Eric Larson, or, you know, but for me, it's Mark Bagley Spider-Man.
He did Ultimate, right?
Influential. Yeah. Yeah.
He's the one who wrote the first 100 issues.
Yeah. He drew the first 100 issues. Yeah.
Which guest artists,
no breaks. Every consecutive issue was Mark Bagley.
That's insane.
Yeah. That dude is a workhorse, you know, and an unsung badass.
Yeah.
In my opinion, in comics. But yeah, you know, so again, not too deep, not too hardcore first ones.
So this one again is another one that I was worried might be on your comic list.
Yeah.
Transmetropolitan, just the whole run.
Nice. Yeah.
That's just what, when I want to make comics, that's what I want to make.
Right. Yeah.
Anytime I think about making them, it's always just trying to emulate what a cool fucking comic that was.
Yeah. Seriously, man. For real.
I can't say anything else.
Yeah. I love it, man. I totally agree. My number three is Johnny the Homicidal Maniac. And this might be where I start to get a little obscure.
That's not obscure.
Yeah, maybe not.
It's not obscure.
Yeah. But yeah, Yonan Vasquez, the original Johnny the Homicidal Maniac, that was something that I totally would have been able to do and kind of had a mind to do like in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know. I connected to it not so much as everything else Jonan Vasquez has done.
Yeah.
As much as Johnny, you know, not so much into like the Squee or Lenore or any of that kind of stuff. But Johnny was just, it was insane.
He did Invader Zim too, which is
yes, he did nuts. Invader Zim. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's done a lot of great work.
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
that's a great comic,
but that's where he kicked it all off, you know, his self-published,
yeah,
you know, Johnny. And it was just gothy and dark and weird.
Yeah.
You know,
we were kind of gothy and dark and weird stuff.
And I really enjoyed it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We were kind of
good stuff.
Kind of that when we were younger.
I love the style, you know? Yeah. So that was my number three.
Cool. My number two is a specific story. I mean, in general, all the Astro City stuff was really good, but, Tarnished Angel, which was a unique look on comics. And for me, I guess it's kind of one of the influences. It's so where you take the standard thing and kind of just flip it on its head. Right. So it's a story about the villain. And after he's done, you know, he's done his time and he got caught, he went in prison.
Okay.
And he's trying to not be the bad guy anymore.
Right.
He's, well, you know, he's a completely made of metal guy and he's, yeah, he's like, he's just trying to get a job and he can't find a job because he's a felon. And he's a well-known supervillain and he's just right, trying to get by. You know what I mean?
That's cool.
It's a day in the life,
yeah,
of cool, a reformed supervillain.
Nice.
And it's the whole story and it's really cool.
Hell yeah. Very nice. My number two is, The Witching Hour.
Oh, the, man.
Jeff Loeb and, Chris Bacalo.
Yeah.
Rendition. There's a 3-issue mini.
Yeah.
From a classic DC title called The Witching Hour, mm-hmm, that was published in the 70s and 80s that, that my mom loved and collected and was one of the horror comics that I grew up on.
Oh, right on.
And, but like, it's totally not connected,
mm-hmm,
you know, the Jeff Loeb, Chris Bacalo version. But you're familiar with,
very
with
familiar.
And it is, it's one of those things where to me, like, this is art.
Mm-hmm.
The expressiveness of it, the way it communicates, how like visually it is. I mean, there are black and white sequences where you can swear you see color.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's really, really strong, evocative tools and stuff. I mean, it's to me, it's just one of the, you know, most impactful comics. It just blew my mind. Yeah. And I still love it to this day.
Yeah, me too. It's one of the coolest comics ever published. And I'm glad that they got to do something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fantastic. And by two masters of the craft.
And they were at their height at that time.
Yeah, totally.
So my number one is Midnight Nation.
Nice.
By Straczynski.
Yeah, nice.
He said he wanted to write a 12-issue miniseries, a 1-year miniseries to tell, yep, the story that takes place during a year. And it's just a really cool story.
It really is. It's a smart story too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's what I like about his writing and it's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's a cool just read, and I think it's best read as a one story, you know,
in the graphic novel format.
Yeah. And I think that's how he wanted to do it, but that's, yeah, they didn't just do that back then. They just published, right, monthly. They, so he
singles,
so he made it as a 12-issue miniseries, which is great.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic comic, and it's another one of those ones that when I try to make a comic book, I try to think that kind of level,
right,
or that kind of basically trying to emulate that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
nice. Yeah. Oh man. my number one is Transmetropolitan.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I mean, to me, it's the height of comics. It's, you know, I mean, there's a strong Hunter S. Thompson kind of streak, a strong, yeah, kind of commentary in a way that I really like, that I think only comics can do, that there's so much in that I don't think you could live action a Transmetropolitan. It would be bonkers expensive for one thing. And I think that,
yeah,
it would be really, really jarring.
And they couldn't do it as a movie because it wouldn't it couldn't tell the story how it was meant to be.
How it was meant to be told.
Yeah.
And as far as like the nature, especially in our culture right now, like this, the identity crisis that is like American culture, right?
Yeah. He nailed that one on the head, didn't he?
Really gets into stuff like that on a level where it's so abstractified and so alien, you know?
Yeah.
Where, you know, people are now identifying as machines.
You're right. That is
transhumanism.
That's,
you know,
that's why it was on my list.
Yeah. And it is on such a level that I think, you know, I mean, the one particular short story where they do the election cycle.
My God.
When it came out, yeah, the Beast versus the Smiler.
Yes.
And you look at when that was written and came out and how, like, because I've enjoyed looking at like each American election presidential election cycle in the lens of Transmetropolitan. And it seems to be coming further and further into focus with what was done with Transmet.
This last election cycle.
Yeah.
Is just kind of like, they looked at that comic and went, that's a good idea. Let's do it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a roadmap, guys.
Yeah.
And it's so, I really like how it really is like a Hunter S. Thompson in a future.
Yeah. You know?
And it's kind of like it's a future that's like a combination between like cyberpunk, Idiocracy, and Futurama.
Yeah. I think it's also kind of like the Flintstones.
Yeah.
The Flintstones was set in the Stone Age.
Right.
But it was really a commentary on the 50s.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think.
Because it's definitely, you know, set in this weird, crazy future, but it's a commentary of like the modern day.
Yeah. It's a commentary.
Yeah.
He's doing that. He's exaggerating everything about now and then.
To the most absurd level. Bus stops. You know, the bus stop benches, when the bus stop's running, the bench heats up to 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, when the bus is not there. Yeah.
The buses aren't there so that no one can sleep on the bus.
Yeah.
On the bus stop. The bench. You know,
it reminds me of like I saw the other day where they have like normal looking chairs, like with arms and stuff. And there's a space between each of them and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why would they put chairs there? And I realized they're bolted to the ground. I was like, oh, that's what people can't sleep at the fucking park bench or at the bus stop.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane. Why don't we just, instead of spending the money to do that, why don't we just work on this homeless problem? I don't want to get into political views, but no. That's insane. It is an amazing story. I love it.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it was on mine too. So.
Yeah. I mean, it was profound to me the whole run. Just absolutely profound.
And
it is a sequence of stories. So there's all these short stories, but the way that it begins and the way that it ends is just,
it's planned.
Yeah. It's fantastic. It's genius. Yeah.
He knew what he was doing when he started and he knew where he wanted to go. And he just told that story.
Yeah. One of my absolute favorites.
Yeah.
Well, my absolute favorite.
Yeah. Well, right on. So that's been the top five with a D10.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us. And if you'd like to see any and all things Mop and Bucket, please head on over to the website, mopandbucket.net. And if you'd like to help support more content like this, please consider becoming a patron. Right now, it's just $1 a month. And it really does make things like this podcast possible. Thanks for tuning in. And we'll talk to you guys in a week or so.
We'll catch you later.